We can start with our session. Maybe just before we start with our session, we just got a correspondence from an organization called Business Environment Specialists. They say they're an independent non-profit company. They are inviting us to a workshop on the 17th, which is Wednesday, between 12:15 and 13:45. Some of the members who have an interest may wish to register their interest, participate or attend with the committee secretary. With the establishment of a central regulatory impact assessment in the presidency, regulatory impact assessment is being introduced into national policy development and legislative process as a mechanism to test regulatory options and assess their likely social and economic impact, costs and benefits. Following a 207 cabinet decision, a central RIA unit will support national departments implementing a system, and we can expect RIA to gather momentum over the next year or two. And the correspondence goes on. I'm sure what we will do, we'll just make a copy for members to receive and for them to peruse on their own time. But those interested by end of business of today and should forward their names to Bulelo. Now, what we will then expect of us now will be to listen to a presentation to be done by Perishable Product Export and Control Board. The chairperson and both the CEO as well are here, and then we'll allow the chairperson of the board to introduce herself and the team, and then expect that of a presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you that we have this opportunity to come and present to you our strategic plan, which is a five-year plan, and our budget for the coming year. I have the CEO with me, Lavoya Mabombo, and then we have Mr. Martin, who is our Senior Executive for Value Added Services, and I think he also looks after our statutory operations at the same time. And then we have Mr. Johan Schwiebus, who is our Chief Financial Officer, and then we have Adele, who is our Company Secretary, and then we have Mr. Makaya, who is our Human Resource Senior Executive. And I just want to thank them all for being here and thank them for putting this all together for us to be able to present to you. I think if you will allow me now, I'll just make the presentation.
We do know her, all right. Familiar face?
Sorry, my name's Elaine Alexander, and I'm the chairperson of the board, and I'm one of the board appointees under the Act, which allows appointments under deciduous, and I represent table grapes in my own capacity, and that's how I sit on the board. I apologize for that. Okay. I think what we're going to do is just a bit of background. I know we've been here, and you, I'm sure, are quite familiar with what the board does, but a little bit of background again about us, our strategy in some detail, and then a look at our employment equity, transformation, and skills development, and then our finance and budgets going forward for the next year. Just a bit about our legislative framework. The PPCB Act was under Act 9 of 1983. It was originally under transport, and then it was given over to the Department of Agriculture, Forest, or at that time the Department of Agriculture. It came under their auspices as a public entity. And then we are also an assignee under the Agricultural Product Standards Act. brought into being in 1990, and that gives us, we inspect product for export and then we certify it. That gives our products a really good advantage, especially within the EU, because our products tend not to be held up at port. And the one thing that our clients do value is the fact that we can certify and that the EU accepts our certification, you know, in line with their own. So they tend not to hold our products up. So I think that's a very valuable or a value that we bring to our clients. And then we obviously governed under the PFMA, and we try to, we do adhere to that in every way that we can. Just the environment that we operate in, there are the three acts. The first act, the Standards Act, looks at quality, MRLs, which is minimum residue limits, which is about chemicals that are sprayed, and that is to ensure that we're not going to poison the people that eat the fruit that we produce, and then food safety and traceability. Food safety traceability is certainly becoming something that is being is a topic overseas, and I think something we will see more of. I think what we have to understand is in that top half, quality, MRL, and food safety traceability, those areas are going to become what I would suggest the new tariff barriers of the future.
Ms. Deborah,
let's have one
all the time.
So I think we need to be aware of what is happening in quality and MRLs and food safety. On the PPCB Act, we do temperature, cold treatment management, and equipment certification. This is very important for the quality of our product when it arrives on the other side. Our cold chain often doesn't have integrity, and if we don't have integrity in the cold chain, what happens is our food arrives on the other side and over time will not have a good shelf life. And that then impacts back to our farmers. So what we need to be doing is making sure that that cold chain, from the minute that product enters the cold chain, has integrity all the way through to wherever it's sold. And even in the retailer, that he is ensuring that the product's taken care of. And then under the Pest Act of 36, phytosanitary requirements, from the PPCB side, we also support the Department of Agriculture when it comes to special markets, such as the Chinese market, where we have a 22-day cold series. So that 22 days is at a certain temperature, and we monitor what is going on. We also support our government's bilateral agreements with other countries. Sometimes that entails them asking us to provide advice and certain types of training, if so required by our government. Just our model, we fall under the Ministry of Agriculture. We have a board of directors. The board of directors is chosen out of the Act. There's a criteria by which the board is appointed. The board nominates its own chairperson, and the board then appoints a general manager or a CEO, and then we have the executive management. This is our strategy, our vision. We see ourselves as a partner in global competitiveness for the SA perishable product industry. And on our mission side, it's about building competitive capacity in our people and systems and in industries which we serve in order to instill win-win confidence. Or worldwide confidence, sorry, but also win-win, sorry. And our values are professionalism, accountability, passion, integrity, and confidence. Our delivery model, these are our strategic objectives, of which we have five. The first one is to enhance the credibility of the export certificate. As I explained earlier, that is extremely important for us entering markets. The PPCB name is well known. It's almost like a trademark, and for some governments to see that on a box means that they know that the product has reached the highest standard of quality and that it's been certified. So it's really important that we continue as a PPCB to strive to ensure that that certificate has credibility with other governments. We're going to support the export of competitiveness of the SA perishable products industry, and that is through the research we do, it's through giving advice, it's bringing back information, it's benchmarking against the rest of the world, and we're going to feed that into our industries. We're going to strengthen our capacity as a credible source of information. The PPCB is often the place where we gather information at source because we inspect, we receive all the information on exports, the intended destinations, what is being exported. So from a government perspective, that's extremely important because then we've got credible information that we can use in negotiations, that we can use when we are in trade negotiations, bilaterals, and also as an industry. That information is important for us to do planning, to understand what's happening in our market. And that's definitely a place that PPCB can play a much bigger role for our country. And support government in ensuring confidence and quality assurance and food safety systems for the local perishable products markets. As we all know, things are changing out there. Other governments are requiring us to be more accountable, especially from our local market, because what we do in our local market is what we would be doing with exports, or if we intend to have people, our imports, meeting certain requirements, we should be doing them to our own products coming into the local market. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to uplift what we have on our local markets. And, of course, there's the new Consumer Protection Act, which will also demand that of our products. So PPCB has a role to play there. And our fifth objective is to support government in developing systems to ensure compliance with food safety and quality standards. And that is looking at electronic systems and how do we put other process systems in place to ensure that our products are complying with what we expect, the highest compliance that we expect. The world we live in, increased self-regulation, increasing costs of doing business, the power of industry organization, that sounds wonderful, international trade and fruit and veg. We have a new department with an opportunity to support that department in all of what they're doing, change the way we've done things. We've got a chance to be innovative, to support the administrative capacity of DAF. Other opportunities, lobbying, business and industry, and then there's the business risk management profile and food control system. So that's the environment that we exist in. And just some key issues in the environment. We have human capital. We've been developing that. We brought Mr. Makaya on board, and he's been working very hard on that, dealing with cultural issues, competencies, and increasing capacity. So we're looking at employment equity, gender, disability, improving what the PPCB looks like, and also encouraging our industries to change the way they look too. Making sure that our competencies supply our organizations with what they need, and we've gone through a skills audit, and we now have a proper database there. The industries are doing that too. And so it helps us to ensure that we are bringing out people that are going to enhance our competitiveness in our industries. And on the capacity side, making sure that the people match the job, that we've got the right attitudes, and that the human resource development role across all things is correct. So we have an equity employment plan. We have a skills audit performance, and then we have performance management that we run in our company. Key issues in the international environment, processes, business models, infrastructure, capacity. We're involved in regional, the program management, and we have business division, and there's the structure. And then on the we have infrastructure, IT enablement. We see that as particularly important. We know that under the King III, the IT is also becoming a governance issue. But we see IT enablement as a major way of making our industries competitive. And then we have the corporate services capacity. Now on the capacity side, the business procurement analysis capacity. So we have the business modeling, we have infrastructure auditing, and we have business process review. to ensure that we are following what we should be doing. And more on that, our structure and governance, we've spoken already, board of directors, making sure that the composition is right, the governance is right. On the executive, with the capability and capacity, competencies, cohesion and peer review, and consolidation of that exco is extremely important, that our team is all working together with the same objective, the same vision. And then bringing our management committees on board, what is their role, their competencies, the capacity, ensuring the composition is correct. At the board of directors, we run an annual board evaluation. Each board member is evaluated, and each member has a right to evaluate the board as a whole. That is then passed on to the minister. We also have an executive evaluation and also a MANCO evaluation. As you can see, this is our value chain analysis, where we're involved. It goes from orchard to consumer. We're following the idea that it's pip to plate and that we should be involved in ensuring that competitiveness, we enhance the competitiveness the whole way through, and we make sure that that cold chain has integrity. What are we doing? This is our offerings. We do research and development, quality inspection, food safety audits. We're doing that under the auspices of the department. We are inspecting businesses that are involved in providing food products. We provide industry statistics that are available on our web. We also work with the industries to provide them with real-time information. We do training and advice to small businesses, to SMEs, to emerging farmers. We have private certification services, the value-added services. Then, of course, there's the cold chain management, which is from the PPCB Act. And then inland phytoinspections, where we're looking at phytosanitary issues, which are pest control, ensuring that none of these hitchhiker bugs get out of the country, that they stay here and we deal with those. This is just where we are. As you can see, we're in most places in the country. We are operating in all the fruit areas of the country, and we have offices around the country. So we know what's going on in most places with our fruit and our products. Just a few, some nice grapes there. It looks like red globe on the top left-hand corner. Oranges, grapefruit. And the man inspecting the grapes, he takes the whole bunch out, and then they often squash the whole bunch to get the juices to check the sugars, which I always think is quite sad, but anyway. This is PPCB in the supply chain. The inspector in checking the temperature to ensure that it's reached the temperature that it needs to be exported at to go into the container. As you'll see here, he is checking looks like the container. You've got to make sure that that has integrity, that it's not going to break down at the wrong times. And in fact, it's monitored on the ship all the way over by the PPCB. You can see them loading. There's the containers loading. The different vessels, that the big, large container vessels now, that's becoming the way to go forward. Our strategy in detail, what we've done is that we have put it into government's priorities in the next 4 years about decent work, sustainable livelihoods, education, health, rural development, food security, land reform, and the fight against crime and corruption. Also, we've taken into consideration the medium-term strategic framework, 2010, speeding up growth, transforming the economy, social and economic infrastructure development, rural development linked to land reform, investing in skills and human resources, and improving the nation's health profile, fighting against crime and corruption, developing cohesive and sustainable communities, improving international cooperation, implementing sustainable natural resource management and democratic development state. And then the outcomes and the relevance to PPCB. Outcome 4, decent employment through inclusive economic growth. Outcome 5, skilled and capable workforce to support an inclusive growth path. And the sixth one, an efficient, competitive, and responsive economic infrastructure network. And then a vibrant, equitable, sustainable rural communities contributing towards food security for all. We see these as all relevant to PPCB. So if we look at the fourth one, the decent work through inclusive economic growth, in our strategic objective, we have to support the global competitiveness of the South African perishable products. Our target is to enroll a minimum of 20 people. We are doing a technologist program. We're training them up. We have that every year. And then we're looking at having one project in each province where we're looking at interventions with regards to youth and also rolling out our training academy, which we've been talking to a number of other players in respect to that. There are other initiatives in that respect, so we hope we will tie up with those initiatives. And then partnering with other entities, we have agreed with ARC, NEMC, OBP, and Land Bank to work together to train subsistence and smallholder farmers. Looking at PPCB people, that's our strategic objective. Again, support the global competitiveness. Fully implement talent management framework consistently during the next 4 years. So it's all about developing people that can go out in the market and enhance what we're doing, bring the much-needed skills into this industry and outside the industry, and also give as much people the knowledge about what they need to do to achieve compliance. Then looking at number six, efficient, competitive, and responsive economic infrastructure, again, it's our strategic objective to engage with all the relevant operating divisions of Transnet. We've already signed an MOU with them, looking at supporting them to ensure that our seaports are designed in such a way that they accommodate the increasing demands, the need for throughput, to do that quickly, to get the containers onto ships and into the markets, to ensure that the cold chain has integrity. Looking at moving product on rail, we've gone back to rail. We have a rail system. Why are we just on road? Roads is expensive. So we need to be using every form of transport we can that makes us efficient. Engage in partnerships with two fresh produce markets. We're now working with the Joburg fresh produce market. And we're looking at assisting the local government with the infrastructure, designing that to ensure that those local fresh produce markets are efficient and effective, both for those that are bringing their product there and for those that buy product on those markets. And then on the seventh side, ensuring that there are rural communities which are sustainable and they're contributing towards food security. We're working on partnerships and projects in the Eastern Cape, Limpopo, and the Western Cape, partnering with the industry and with small growers. We're also working with the local governments on that, on the provincial governments and the municipal government to try and enhance those the production of, especially on the food security side. And then we, as we said earlier, we're partnering with the NEMC and other public entities to look at the identified land reform projects and ensure that those land reform projects have the correct skills to produce the correct product. And then looking at conducting research on failed land reform fruit farms and identifying where it went wrong, what went wrong, and then providing solutions to the department to help them to put in interventions that can either turn them around or ensure that we don't make the same mistakes going forward. Our business plan is all about risk management, outputs, our people, and budget and finance. That's the three key areas that our business plan operates on. And then on our people development and transformation, I think I'm going to ask Mr. Makaya, or the CEO, Mr. Makaya, could you talk to the presentation on our people development and our transformation? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Our people initiative, Chair, actually premised on our people vision.
That can is you switch off your...
I think I'm on, Chair. Our vision, Chair, is to offer a conducive environment for a dynamic and knowledgeable people in order to build a diverse workforce representative of the South African society. That is what we, the vision we have for the organization and our mission, how to get there. We will invest in our people, in people development initiative, and endeavor to create an environment that enables people to be effective in their endeavors to deliver on objectives, and by applying the best people practices, by doing research and benchmarking our practices with best companies to work for, so that we align our practices with those initiatives. In terms of our objectives, we have five objectives that we strive for. The first objective is that to roll out an integrated talent management pipeline. By that we mean that we need to leverage all our people initiatives so that we actually ensure that people's skills are actually enhanced, that we develop people properly, that we do performance manage people, and we do actually run an ATP program which is intended to fit in people into our system, graduates who have no work experience that come through our system, so that we can then be able to deploy them to the rest of the industry and prepare them for the industry. And our performance indicators, Chair, we've had 32 people already being appointed permanently to our organization from Junior Inspector, coming out of the program. And we've also had up to date 103 students coming through the program. Some of the students have actually been employed by the industry, and we have had 48 students graduating at NQ5 level, and we are actually going to be going forward with these initiatives. On the next objective, Chair, that is ensuring that we actually retain our people and we build capacity to ensure that our people are competitive. We have developed an integrated skills development plan, and we've created specialist positions within the industry so that we can actually ensure that our standards throughout the organization are harmonized. And we have actually enrolled people in leadership development programs, and we have quite a robust study scheme to ensure that people do upgrade their skills. And our training spend share of the cost of employment is 5.5%, 5.6%, and we ensure that we comply with all the three frameworks, and we ensure that we do transfer skills speedily through the harmonization program, where we put people through this program to ensure that there is also an opportunity for them to leverage the knowledge they have so that they can actually understand the standards properly and apply the standards throughout our main products. And in Chair, what we also do, we try to benchmark our practices, I indicated before, so that they are actually in line with the best companies. We do annual benchmarks of practices. We do constant review of policies. And we then use that as a measure by ensuring that we benchmark these and position our decisions towards the market dictates. One of our value drivers, Chair, to ensure that we actually leverage the intrinsic value of the share of the stakeholders, that is our customers, our employees, and the industry we serve, by ensuring that we measure the effectiveness of the company. We ensure that we leverage technology for optimal performance, and we actually manage people through effective structure. And our measure there is that we do dialogue sessions where people engage the company in the issues that actually are important to them and elevate those issues to the right level. And we are going to be conducting more perception surveys so that we can actually address issues that come out of in the various levels of the organization. And one of our main objectives, value drivers, is that of ensuring employee welfare throughout the organization by rolling out an integrated wellness program to ensure that people's issues, people who bring people problems of personal nature, and people with psychosomatic issues that we have to deal with, to enable our company and the organization and management to deal with issues, let us feel that the organization requires to deal with people issues given the situation right now we're in right now. Tell us the profile, Chair. Right now we have 33% of our employees come from the white racial group, 4% Indian, 39% African, and the rest is colored communities. We should note, Chair, that we had a late start in this regard, and we make ourselves against the national demographics. That is our very driver. We ensure that we match our initiative so that we reflect the issues of demographics. We acknowledge, Chair, that we still have a long way to go, and we are actually focusing on that objective.
Thank you, Mr. Makaya. I'd like to give over to our Chief Financial Officer to present our finance and our budget, Mr. Schwebus.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The PPCB program for the business is structured into three main divisions. The first one is business operations, which is responsible for delivering the statutory services, but then also the value-added, the services that add value to our clients. And the development services, the research and development programs, the training and development programs. The second program is responsible for ensuring that governance structures are in place and are being maintained. And that comprises of the Chief Executive's Office, Legal Secretariat and Communication, as well as risk management. And the third division is corporate services, and their responsibility is to ensure that there are sufficient systems and processes in place that would serve the business needs to deliver on expectations. And that division comprises of human resources, finance department, information technology, internal audit, and business systems. Now, the budget is informed by the strategic plan or the strategic objectives, which is set out on page 25 to 43, all linked to those five various activities which are linked to those five strategic objectives, but also the risk management plan, which is set out on pages 21 and 24 on the pack, which only highlights the 10 top risks. But the budget addresses those key areas. But there are also certain realities that we need to face, that PPCB is facing. The first one is PPCB is a regulator, and it needs to fulfill its mandate. Now, the factors that have an impact on that is that there are legislation, and that we need to comply to legislation. There are skills required to perform those activities, and we also rely on high level of judgment of the people. If they certify a product to be suitable for export, there's a level of judgment, professional judgment, that they need to pass on, to pass. Now, the response that we have to counter the, or to address these realities is that we're in the process of reviewing legislation, that we partner with the public, with government, and also other public entities, which the chairperson has identified in the previous slides, to train people, to develop the skills, and to look at the food safety systems, both for the local market and also for the imported products. And we're looking at also making sure that there's confidence in our business systems by creating our systems, the ISO 17020. The second reality that we need to face is a diverse stakeholder need that we need to fulfill. And stakeholders, we refer to government, we refer to our clients, and we refer to, for example, our employees, and and the society as a whole. What our clients and what the expectations of these stakeholders are is they expect people to be highly responsive to their needs. PPCB also has decentralized operations. We have offices all spread all over the country, and we need to make sure that we have business systems in place to facilitate good and accurate communication. The responses that is included in the budget is to look at improving efficiencies. There's also pressure that we need to look at cost. Because it's a legal requirement, we need to be very cost efficient in conducting our business. So we're looking at cost efficiency projects, which for example is the alternative inspection methodology, looking at different approaches, CCQI in the cold chain. We're looking at electronic data interchange, so to get the data into our system much more effectively and accurate and efficiently. Also, we're looking at growth in our value-added services, the development side, and that is to leverage our capabilities, the capabilities that we have in PPCB, to use it somewhere else, which would be to the benefit of the industry and to other stakeholders, for example, training and development programs and value-added services. What we're also doing is, because of the high level of judgment and the high level of skills required to perform our duties, we do the skills order gap. Mr. Mackay has indicated to that and to the chairperson. The third reality PPCB is being faced with is the current economic condition. It's tight, and the producers, it has an impact on the producer. Once again, we look at cost efficiency programs to enable PPCB to operate much more efficiently. And then there's also the expectation that that PPCB as a public entity needs to respond to South Africa's social needs and APEC's priorities. And what PPCB in the budget, what it reflects there is investment in transferring knowledge and skills and training programs. The fifth reality that we identified that PPCB is being faced with is the industry structures. PPCB, the cost structures, the skills required, the systems that's embedded in PPCB for us to deliver, it's very much dependent on how the industry is structured. At the moment, the industry, there are many activity points right throughout South Africa that we need to attend to and where we perform our inspections. And that's because of industry and structures, and that drives part of our costs. For example, if people need to go on relief duty, we need to provide them with subsistence allowances and also accommodation. The other one is it's knowledge-based driven entity. 67% of our cost is people cost. It is a human resource. It's a knowledge-based entity. And we employ people to make those judgments and to perform the duties. And the budget makes provision for that training, development, harmonizing skills, applying the standards in a harmonized way. And the last one that we identified as being critical to the business is the growing need for technology to support the business that would enable PPCB to become more efficient, but also to serve, to be more responsive to the changing needs of the industry. Now, the budget framework, the assumptions or the guidelines that that the budget is based on, the annual salary adjustment of 8.6%, the inflation rate at 6.7%, the average hourly rate of 370 rand per hour, on average kilometre claim is 129, subsistence allowance is 240 rand. We increased that 220 to 240 rand. And the accommodation, the daily rate, when people go on relief duty is 170 rand per day for people for us to provide accommodation for those people going relief duty. The total budget, the income budget, is 166.1 million rand against the expenditure budget of 164.4 million rand. If you compare it to against the estimate of 2010, the income is 147 and the expenditure expectation is 137.3. Expenditures is lower than the budgeted expenditure of 144.9 million rand, mainly because of vacancies in the PPCB. Firstly, and secondly, of some of the programs that we started rolling out very late due to the course of 2009 and 2010. The changes in the budget in terms of income in relation to the estimate, it's additional 18.7 million rand income. The estimate is 147.4 million rand. And the expenditure is 27.1 million rand. Additional expenditure on the estimate of 137.3 is 27.1 million rand. And against the budget, it's 19.5 million rand additional expenditure, which is 13.5%. How does the income and expenditure look like in terms of spread within the PPCB? It is 63.1% of our total income comes from Agricultural Product Standards Act inspections that we perform. That represents 63% of our total income. 23% is of the cold chain activities that we perform. And then 10% is the value-added services that we deliver. And then the 3.3% is the interest that we receive on our cash funds. In terms of expenditure, 65% are people-related costs, and 12% is for, 65% is related to statutory activities, statutory services. Value-added services absorbs 12% of the cost, governance 5%, and then corporate services, 15%. That's in terms of our business structure. Change year on year, statutory services increased by 16%, value-added services by 46%, corporate governance by 22%, and then the corporate services by 17%. But that's in relation to the expenditure, and because the different business units have different sizes, different expenditure allocated to them, we try to pull a holistic view on what's the increase in terms of expenditure for the whole business, and we're looking at 17.1 million rand that we need, additional money that we need to fund statutory operations. We're looking at 6.2 additional funds that we need to deliver value-added services, 1.5 million rand for corporate governance, and then 4 million rand for corporate services. A summary of the budget, if you try and reconcile, if you reconcile the estimate expenditure back to what we budget for, those are the biggest contribute factors that have an impact on the increase on budget. Employment expenditure is 17.1 million rand additional increase in expenses, which represent 12.5% of the increase. Strategic projects, 2.2 million rand, those are 2.2%, 3 million rand, which relates to the 5 strategic objectives. Also, what we did on the relief duty days, certain of the regions, production regions, require more relief duty, and it requires 2,500 relief duty days. So people that are going to spend days away from their home office or their home base in the regions. And that has the impact on our subsistence allowance, but also on our kilometers, and also on our accommodation. And that's an additional 1.3 million rand. That represents 0.9 or almost 1% of the increase in our expenditure. The timing of expenditure is 1.1 million rand, and that's because during the course of last year, labels and technical equipment was ordered, which happened in 2008 and 2009. and we had stock, and now we need to reorder in 2009, and that represents 1.1 million rand of our total budget. Harmonization workshops, the harmonization of skills to improve the judgment capability in PPECB, that's 660,000 rand. It's 0.5% responsible for 0.5% of the increase in expenditure. Subsistence allowance, we benchmark the subsistence allowances that we pay for our people that goes on relief duty that are long, that away from home for long periods, and we increase it to 40 rand a day, and that's additional almost a million rand expense to our budget, and that represents 0.7%. Corporate communication plan that we want to roll out this year, it's 490,000 rand, 0.4%, and other expenditure represents 1.7% of the total increase, or 2.3 million rand. But it's well below the inflation, expected inflation rate, because of certain cost efficiency programs that we plan to deliver next year. Our major expenditure, by far the people cost, represents 107 million rand of the total budget of 164 million rand. It's 66% of our total budget. The percentage change on the estimate, it's 19%. Activity cost, that is accommodation, subsistence allowance, petrol for the people to perform their, deliver the services, represents 80% of our total budget, and it's 30 million rand, which is 23% up on the previous year, mainly because, once again, of the increase in subsistence allowance, but also the relief duty days, the 2,000 days that have been increased. The training is 5 million rand, it's a 3% of our total budget, and there's a 26% increase, mainly because of, in the 2009 and 10, we rolled out the training plan only partially. We did not roll out in full. Rental and maintenance, rental of technical equipment, but also office accommodation, whole lot, there are many contracts that we need to enter into during the course of next year for office accommodation. Telephone and stationery, it's an increase of 2%, and it's because...
Summarize now, without really getting to telephone.
So the total increase, the total cost for the expenditure is 164 million rand, which is a 19% increase on the estimate of last year of 137 million rand. Per division, once again, it's a total budget of 164 million rand. Employment cost 99 million rand. Stationary operation 38, value added service 7.5, governance 4 million rand, corporate services 15.5 million rand. That is the cost that's been allocated to the different departments.
I think we have other slides which are in the pack, and they sort of break all of these different costs down, but they're really about the same cost. Maybe what we should go on to is how we fund and look at the levies, if we may. Here we've got statutory services broken down, value-added services, governance, corporate services, and then this is how we fund ourselves, through our fees and levies, maybe.
The increase in our fees and levies to fund our total expenditure, it's looking at Citrus, for example, it increases, that is an 8-year trend. Over the past 8 years, we increased our levies by an average of 4.26%, for grapes 6.2%, export 5.435%, for container citrus inland, avocados was over 8 year period, a reduction in levies of 0.19%, and container inspections 5.8%. If you compare that to the average inflation rate for the past 8 years, the CPI index for the we source that information from SA Statistics, of 6.2%, and the PPI index of 6.6%, and PPCB is just below that. It averages between 4.4% and 6.6, just over the 6%, as indicated in the previous slide. How we fund the business? We require 166.1 million rand. If we take no volume growth into only take the volume growth into consideration with no increase in levies and fees, we get 154.7 million rand. So we need an additional 11.4 million rand to fund the increase in expenditure, which gives us an average of 7%. How we pass it on to the different industries, as we said, on average, we will increase the levies by 6.7%. However, in the industries where there are low volume growth, for example, in citrus and in grapes, we're going to pass on a higher increase in levies and fees, which is closer to 12% and 12% for grapes and citrus in 7%. Those are the breakdowns: citrus 7.2%, grapes 12.8%, and the other products 6.7%. CapEx, we budgeted for CapEx, 2.5 million rand. Building is to accommodate for people with disabilities. Information technology is to upgrade our information technology platforms of 1.4 million rand. Equipment, technical equipment is 188,000 rand. And furniture, mostly for the regional offices, is 480,000 rand. Total CapEx budget of 2.5 million rand. That's a summary of the budget which I've gone through. We do provide a break-even budget, and the fees ranges between 6.7% and 12% increase. But if there are sufficient export volumes, we pass an increase of 6.7% on to the industry.
Thank you, Johan. Just to conclude, our flagship projects for 2010 is we're going to be running an international harmonization workshop on commercial quality standards for fresh fruit and vegetables for countries of Africa. That's with the UNCE, it's the United Nations body, and that's particularly important because one of the greatest challenges that the industry faces, perishable products industries and any agricultural product, is the need to harmonize quality standards and standards, because we face a periphery of different standards and different audits, which is increasing our costs and creating barriers to entry into various countries. So we need to bring all that together and try and create one standard. Alternative sampling and container methodology, trying to find alternative ways of doing things that make it more cost effective and also make it easier for the farmers and for everybody involved. Rolling out emerging farmer capacity building partnerships for the Joburg fresh produce market, and then electronic data interchange and rolling out the PPCB training academy. Those are our main projects for the coming year. New issues that we are facing is the Consumer Protection Act 68 of 2008. That means that we as a country, as I said earlier, we need to ensure that what is happening in our local market meets standards. If we then look at imports and we bring an import in that doesn't meet standards and we're not enforcing that in our local market, our consumers are in jeopardy, but we also as a country can have our exports stopped because they are all linked. The carbon footprint, as we all know, the environment is an issue, and carbon footprint has become one of the key words in that, and certainly as a perishable industry, we have been measuring our carbon footprint. Some of us are lucky because we plant trees and vines, so that helps to keep it down. But these are the issues that we face. Youth Employment Incentive Scheme, we're going to have to look at that. We'll be looking at that to see how we get involved as a PPCB, how we can enhance it. And the Industrial Policy Action Plan that was recently unveiled by the Minister of Trade and Industry, how do we as a PPCB get involved in those key sectors such as agro-processing? How do we support government's action plan delivery? Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you. Mrs. Alexandra.
members, here is a perishable product export control board presentation. One of the observations that I've made is that PPECB Act 9 of 1983 is governed in the Transport Ministry. And then we've got another Act, Agriculture Product Standards, that falls within the Agriculture Department. If you could, just before we get into the issues, ma'am, could you just clarify that part a little bit?
Maybe let me know first. Thanks a lot, Chair. The Act, when it was enacted in 1983, was in the same family as, because it was Infrastructure Act with Transnet and so on. The President in 1989 or something like that assigned the Act over to the Minister of Agriculture. Someone 1989, in the late 80s. That's why the PPCP reports to the Minister of responsible for agriculture.
So that was through a proclamation, is it? Members, any questions? Mr. Tutoi, Mama Mabuza? Yeah, go ahead.
Mine is actually a point of order. I noticed at my back, it was in the back here, with my keys in, has now vanished. I wonder if somebody misplaced it when they sat on it. A carry bag. No, it's a paper. It's a light bag, like a folder of a bag, you know, a shoulder bag.
Okay, in the meantime,
it's quite distressful to lose your keys.
Yeah, no, we'll take care of that. Mama Buza?
Chairperson, mine is just a comment. Chairperson, last year the PPECP gave us a list of acts or laws that need to be amended or to be repealed. And I think we need to say as a committee, we are failing them because we are not repealing or amending those laws. For instance, the board is no longer involved in shipping, if I'm not mistaken. And although the role is still stipulated in the Act, to say chairperson is that not, I don't know how to put it. Is it not unlawful for them to continue operating in that way, meanwhile they are not longer involved in shipping? Also to say, Chairperson, if my memory serves me well, fishing, meat industry, I think you are now involved in those two sectors, if I'm not mistaken. To say, Chairperson, we need to sort of put pressure on the department to look into all those laws that need to be repealed or be amended. That is my input, because PPECP took all the trouble of identifying all those outdated laws, and they have played their part. That's what I wanted to say, Chairperson, to say we are failing them.
Dr. Postman?
Thank you, Chair. I think mine is a little bit in line with what Honourable Mabuza is saying. What my question is, or actually just long for more information as well, in controlling the standards, we have quite a number of international standard-setting bodies like the OIE, ISO, and various others. And obviously then also we've got in South Africa, we've got local standards. And my question is, are those in line and who are monitoring those? Because I think there must be a coordination between the international and local standards, obviously. And the other issue on top of it is that we're also seeing lately that more and more private standards are coming into play. Who sets those standards? Is it the private, you know, if the private sector is setting it, is the PPECB also compliant to monitor it and to inform it or implement it? And what is there a cost involvement for the PPECB? Is there an extra cost involved? And maybe also in the same vein, do they think that private standards have an influence on rising costs for the consumer? I think those are maybe an issue that we would need to look at. The other issue that I would like to maybe just get clarity on is opening up of new markets internationally. Have the PPECB also got a role to play in cooperation with the Department of Trade and Industry, maybe for instance to minimize the red tape that is involved for people to export to international countries of the world? I believe that is definitely one of the issues that we will have to monitor, because it can, if red tape is so much that we cannot quickly get rid of it or actually address it, then obviously those markets could go away, could vanish, or other people could take it up. So that is just for information. I think that might be of interest to us. Thank you.
Mr. Ruta.
Thank you, Chairman. I was concerned to see that the grapes are going to pay 12.8% or 12%. It's quite higher than the others. Could you just tell us why that is so? And the other one is on this page one, the PPECB offices versus production regions. They also mentioned that the targets of employment are out of your reach at this moment. I would just wonder if these regions are so spread out over the country, is it not foolish to use the country's statistics to enforce it? Wouldn't it be easier to reach your targets if you would put in line with your regions? For instance, I see there's Western Cape, there's Eastern Cape, there's Natal, KwaZulu-Natal, there's Eastern Mpumalanga, those parts, the northern parts of the country. It's all spread out over different areas. Wouldn't that make more sense?
Members, I've made one of the gravest mistakes in this meeting. Yesterday was International Women's Day, and we never acknowledged that fact. I would imagine by now, before we even were to start our session, we should have said, Malibongwe! I've passed a note to the committee secretariat in recognition of the single fact, Madam Mabuza, that says we have a number of those laws that have been presented to us to a point where we are failing. I was saying to the committee secretary in a note that I've written here that whilst the department had said they only have one law for this committee to consider in this financial year, which is a law that deals mainly with marine fisheries, we equally have a role to play ourselves as parliament, as committee, in saying here are additional laws that need review. We do possess that right. Through our parliamentary legal office, we should be able, this is a note I've written to her, to identify all those laws that have got those shortcomings and those loopholes, and submit as parliament to that parliamentary legal advisory team, so that they assist us as parliament in getting to say, for instance, the law that is governing yourself here as you speak. There is a serious disjunction between what you are doing. Granted, there is a proclamation, but equally that proclamation also will have to speak to some of the issues that relate to how we engage with each other. You have a board that has been appointed. Same issues related to land bank. I would imagine there are even more. But if we are able to engage with the legal team here in Parliament, I would imagine here we should be able to pick up more issues that really seriously need our engagement as parliamentary committee. That would be the issue. I thought perhaps we might have to add more on the same matters that Mama Buza had raised. Now, in your budget, if I were just to quickly, you spoke, I can't remember where exactly, about the strategic projects to a tune of amount of 3 million rand. And unfortunately, you do not have notes that one could refer to for one to be able to get a sense as to, you know, what is meant by a strategic project. Maybe for now, let's engage with those few questions and then we'll come back to another round. Mama Buza will add and then we get responses quickly.
I would like to ask them to give us a report of those failed projects in Limpopo and Mpumalanga that failed because of newcomers in the land reform, to say how far are you with resuscitating those projects? Thank you.
The floor is yours, Chair and Accounting Officer.
Thanks, Chair. maybe, Chair, I think the opening remark made by Honorable Mabuza, together with yourself, Chair, on the outdatedness of the PPCB legislation, let me respond by saying that in the last meeting of the minister together with the MECs, the PPCB Act was identified as one of those legislations under the ministry that require review. And the commentary to that analysis of the ministry was that it requires to be reviewed together with the act that we've put together with it here, which is the Agriculture Product Standards Act, primarily because of the realization that 60% of what the PPCB does is informed by the APS Act, which is in the pack that the Honorable Member says, and 25% is in terms of the PPCB Act. So I thought, let me just make that point, that in terms of the minister herself, the ministry, let me put it that way, that matter is above the radar screen, but of course it's a question of time, and I want to acknowledge that support. But with tongue in cheek, Mr. Abrams, Honorable Abrams, advises us that if you know that the legislation needs to be reviewed, why don't you review to yourself? That was when we last appeared here. And what we didn't want to say because of diplomatic sensitivities, Chair, is that a policy document to review that act, we wrote it in 2008 and submitted to the department, but very little has been done about it because we thought that as a delivery arm of we understand ourselves to be a delivery arm of government, and therefore where our hands are required, we need to stand up and assist. So that was the reason why we drafted a policy document as to how a future PPCP should be looking like, and that assistance we did manage to give. I thought, let me just make that comment. Maybe let me go to share the questions as they came. There were a couple of questions around the standards raised by Honorable Bosman. I think the question was around whether our own standards, whether local, are aligned to that. The process as it goes, Honorable Chair, together with the members, is that the authority to negotiate these standards, correctly so, is government, whether it's through engagement in the UNECE, in the Codex, as it relates to food safety related matters, UNECE as it relates to product quality standards, OIE, OIV, and all these standards. So what we do after government has negotiated participated in the development, setting up of standard, we then come with the implementation responsibility that government has bestowed on us. As it relates to food safety, quality of products of plant origin, our view is that our standards meet those international requirements through an interaction between ourselves, government, and the responsible industries. As it relates to Chair, what gets imported into the country and what gets traded in the local market, when we developed the strategy in 2008 for 5-year horizon, we had said that we need to jack up this part of standard setting, which is within the local market and making sure that imports into the country actually meet the minimum requirement. We cannot say with confidence, Honorable Postman, that products of plant origin that get traded in the local market actually meet the minimum requirements that are met for export. But that's why we highlighted the point in our strategic objective number 4 and 5 to say that we are here to assist government in building capacity to monitor standards in the local market and standards and to monitor imports that are coming into the country, in particular with this relates to products of plant origin. There's a role that department plays in terms of being a national brand protection organization, the NPPO. So those matters are being taken care of there. But our active participation through invitation in the UNECE assists us to make sure that South Africa influences what the outcome of the standards become in terms of fresh fruit and veg in particular. The other point, question that came from Honorable Abrams was around private standards. The private standards do impact on the price of food. The private standards are owned by the private standards owner, whether it's Global Gap, whether it's Tesco or Nature's Choice, whether it's Leaf. So all those are owned by those standard owners. But as a response to the issue around the cost to the consumer as it relates to those private standards, we indicated for ourselves, and we set up a project in 2008, Honorable Postman, to say that South Africa has got a food safety food safety standard internally, which is owned by the department. And the issue that we raised at that point as one of our strategic outputs was to say that what is the reason for us as South Africa not to benchmark our own food safety standard to that of Global Gap? Because currently a food business operator or a farmer spends 2,100 for a local food safety standard, which to some extent is more stringent than the Global Gap standard. But a farmer pays 4,000, just over 5,000 rand for a Global Gap standard. And one of the approaches that we're taking is that benchmark the two pieces of standard and make sure that South Africans South African food business operators, farmers, pack houses, and so on, complying to the food safety standard of South Africa, and then they can get a free passage into the world. So that work, we did a benchmarking exercise, but that work is still on the shelves. We did manage to do a research around that in the last 2 years, and I think that work that we've done remains relevant going forward. Kenya has done it, which is, I think, South Africa is probably much more competitive in the world compared to Kenya, but Kenya has done it, Chile has done it, and a number of countries have done it in the world to make sure that their local producers, their farmers, do not actually have to spend some proprietary-owned standard compared to what they have in their country, which could be enforced, which we do. So I thought that point, our response could perhaps be in that way. The other point, I think the point raised by another...
What is stopping us from...
Chair, we've done that work. You've submitted it to the department.
And?
Chair, we've done that work and we've submitted to the department.
Let me go to the next broad point that
Honorable Bosman had raised around what role does the PCB play in opening markets. I want to make one example which is very important. We, through our own association with International Fora, we are a member of United Fresh Produce Association in the United States, associate member. One of the reasons why we joined the United Fresh Produce Association is they are twofold. First was to ensure that when the citrus season opens in South Africa, United States Department of Agriculture sent inspectors down in the country to inspect the food coming from South Africa, and that cost is borne by the South African grower. Our intention was to make sure that we use UFPA to be a lobby group in the United States for the South African citrus to actually not incur that cost of, because PPCB is working towards being, its standards are recognized in the European Union, and why not being recognized in the US, then the South African grower doesn't bond the cost of having those inspectors coming down here, and therefore the fruit gets inspected by the PPCB, gets a free passage into the United States. In February this year, we emphasized that our condition for continued membership of the United Fresh Produce Association in the United States and Canada is based on them being able, in the short to medium term, unlock that ability for South African food to be able to get free passage without us getting the cost as a grower down in South Africa. So that's the role, that's the lobby role that we play as an implementing agent of government. I thought that hopefully it becomes an example of how we play in the opening up of the market. Maybe let me take a point.
I also would like to answer part of that question, and you suggested the DTI. The issue is that the DTI is our trade lead negotiator when it comes to bilateral trade agreements. The issue is that the Department of Agriculture is the lead negotiator when it comes to access of around plants and that sort. So the process is that we open up an agreement, a negotiated trade agreement, and then that allows us to trade. But what happens next is that we have the department which looks at the plants, the pests, and whatever, the NPPO, they go through a process of agreeing with the other country what is acceptable, what is allowed, what is not allowed. So it's two different things. It would be very difficult for the DTI. It's really the Department of Agriculture's responsibility, and they have a division to do that, where they work on those and they provide, you know, the packages to the other country, they swap, they exchange information, and then they agree, should it just be an open market with certain conditions, should it be a special market with cold chain conditions, depending on their risk analysis of what we could take to them or what we could do. So So it's actually a more complicated process for an agricultural product than it is normally for another product, because the DTI are responsible for the other standards. You know, if you're a manufactured product, it's easier for the DTI when they're negotiating, or a services product, to have that in place in the trade agreement. But it's not possible because of the agricultural requirements to have it up front, and that's just to get.
Okay.
Let me just say the last having set of questions which were raised by Honorable Deutsch. He raised two questions. Where the first one was around employment equity. How we design our employment equity targets is that the region that we have got an office in, we use the regional EAPs for the region, but for the national, which is management, which is management and the head office, we use national EAPs. So we stratify in yeah, that's what we do. The other question that Honorable Tudoid raised was the 12% increase in the table grape levy, no fee, sorry, table grape fee. There's two major reasons why it's because there is no growth, the stagnation in the volumes of table grapes being exported, because our cost is based on the volumes. But the second, the most important reason is the nature of the production of grapes. What we do is that, given the small volumes in grapes, but the number of people that are required to inspect grapes, what we do is that we literally pass 60 and 70 inspectors to the Orange River to do the inspection there. And as Honorable Tutoi would understand, the production of grapes starts from Namibia and go down the Orange River and comes out. So when they finish that production, we pass them down to the Cape so that they do. So that increases the cost of inspecting grapes, because the people are out of their home, in particular in December. In all actual fact, they start from September, and they leave back home in end of January. They are stationed in Bloemfontein, they are stationed in Kakamas, so they do all the inspections there, and they don't go home, and they come down now to the X River Valley. So that's the reason why the cost of doing inspection of the grapes actually are quite high. The last point that was raised by, I think the question raised by Honorable Mabuza was around failed projects. There's two responses to that question, Chair. The first one is that what we've committed ourselves to do is to do a research as to why these failed projects, because in terms of our own volumes for export, we can see the decline in the volumes. We've already started in KZN. That's the only province that we've done at least an analysis at. We've got the outcome of that analysis because we saw the drop in the volumes in the KZN. That's one part of the research, because what we've spoken to Department of Land Affairs and Rural Development, and they say that they need this information so that we can tell them, so that they can understand where to invest when it comes to fresh produce in terms of revitalization. So that's the research that we've done. The second part of response to that question is that, I think, as the Chair had indicated in some of the slides, we're partnering, we've got a memorandum of understanding as five agriculture public entities, NAMC, ARC, OBP, and the Land Bank, and the PPCB. One of the priorities in that MOU is that we will be doing in 2010-2011 an analysis of the failed land reform projects, spearheaded or led in that project by the Land Bank, so that we can see from an input side how can the ARC assist, from a quality side how can PPCB assist. If it's a project of livestock, how can OPP in terms of primary health, animal health, can assist. So that's the two-part response to the question around field projects. Thank you, Chair.
Done.
Yeah.
Mr. Rudra?
It would be an understatement. Thank you for the good answers. It would be an understatement if I say that I am gravely concerned about the quality of our river waters. The quality of the river water, the irrigation. Could somebody just maybe comment on that, please? Because I from own experience in local government, it seems that the other departments are not working together very well on this issue. And you are on the receiving end, I think. You're the last bus stop before it leaves the station. So I'm very concerned about this.
The matter related to private standards. Is this a global body that you are also affiliated to that sets the standards, or is this a global body that exists that determines on its own accord? And who judges that judge to a point where if I am getting you correctly, the department continues to fail to respond to some of your submissions when it comes to a need to set our own standards that must compete, if I were to use those words, with those that shall have been set by that global body. KK, can you respond to this quick one as well?
Shall I respond to the first question on water first? The water problem is really serious in South Africa, and we have known that for quite some time. For the last couple of years, there have been a number of initiatives. I've been lucky, well, not lucky, but I've been involved in two of them. One eventually was raised to the level of NEDLAC, where the issue of the river water and dam water was considered so serious that there was an investigation and a report provided under the Water Commission. I think they did that report, and I'm sure it's available if you'd like to read it. And they started a pilot project to try and deal with it. The issue is that there are a number of reasons why our water is the way it is. One is obviously the rapid urbanization and the unfortunate failure of our infrastructure in and around towns in the peri-urban area to deal with sanitation and that sort of thing. There is also the aging issue around our water treatment plants that we have across the country. And there is also the other issue of industrialization, which has brought new contaminants into the water. Some of the contamination is from old mines, which have not been treated correctly. You probably saw issues on Carte Blanche. And there's certainly been a lot of issues raised by certain scientists from Stellenbosch around the problems. From a fruit perspective and from a perishable produce perspective, we've done a lot of research ourselves on the ability of that water to cause contamination. I think the greatest danger lies more in vegetables because they seem to take up the contamination. In our research, we've been able to show that we drip irrigate, the way we irrigate, we have less uptake of contaminants. We've also identified means of reducing, contamination by the use of dams, where if you pull the water out of the river into the dam for a couple of days, allow settlement, you can reduce the E. coli right down or other heavy metals or whatever. So we've been finding other ways of doing it. I know that we also, as an industry, we contributed to actually the upgrading of the water treatment plant in the Bull, in the one of the Drakenstein municipality areas. along the Berg River. There is an enormous project under the Berg River Water Board to try and make sure the contamination is reduced. It is a serious threat to our country, and it is something that we have to take care of. It is obviously one that has to be managed correctly, because the European Union have already indicated that they've already been here and tested the water. So they're also seriously concerned. And as you know, that certainly on the fruit side, our fruit sector relies still on those traditional markets. So it is a serious threat. But there are things, I mean, I know that other industry bodies such as AgriSA and other bodies have committees that look specifically at this thing. So it is serious. It is an issue around, you know, Water Affairs also has their issues, but you know, we have Department of Local Government. So the water issue entails bringing a lot of players together to try and get delivery, and they have different priorities of delivering. So yes, it's an issue. Yes, we're trying to do things as an industry. We spent a lot of money researching it, and I think there are a lot of different fragmented initiatives around it. One of them would be to try and consolidate those initiatives and have a joint, you know, project to attack the issue. If I may, just on the other side, I'd like to also touch on the private standards before I hand back to the CEO. There was a number of years ago, in 2005-06, a study done by the OEDC on private standards and the impact of private standards on small farmers. They took, in particular, they went to Kenya and had a look at it, especially those who are not subsidized. Private standards are not set by any global, well, they're set by different bodies, but they're not set by governments, and they're not set by bodies recognized by governments. They are set either by retailers or bodies that are set up by retailers or bodies that have come together and set themselves up, or partnerships, and there are numbers of them. I mean, there are about 22 that I could name that if our farmers want to go to Europe and to specific retailers, they may have to adhere to all 22 of them. And that entails an audit on everyone, which you can imagine if you talk about 4,000 Rand just for Global Gap. You've got a BRC, you've got various others. As an industry, we also, as agriculture, facing another audit is ethical trading audits, which have just come into play, which are based on our... In reality, they focus on labor standards and how labor is treated. But we recently, Department of Labor did an audit in our industry and in citrus industry, and came out and said that 98% of our farmers adhere to our local country labor laws, which are in line with the International Labor Organization. But because of some unhappiness, or maybe something is raised as an issue, the retailer feels threatened, or it's something that has become an issue in the newspapers, they come out and they say, you must adhere to a new ethical trading law audit. And those are costing us money. And we are busy trying to harmonize all of these under one body that would entail only one audit. I know there's a Section 7 committee currently at NEMC investigating the ethical trade order. The private standards are an issue. They've even been looked at on the European Union Commission. There are several studies on it done by themselves to understand. And I know I was party at one meeting between the retailers in the European and the UK retailers with the European Commission in regards to private standards. And their request as to why they don't believe the government standards are enough. The retailers, in fact, say that their consumers demand these private standards. They demand standards to be higher than what governments are setting them at. It's debatable. Much of it is often used as a marketing tool.
Whilst you are very academic about it in the course of your explanation, I would have been, as I'm sitting here, I'm trying to imagine in my own little mind here. Are there any experiences that you are, as we speak now, that you are adversely, as a country, affected by those very standards, to a point where a question arises in my own mind as to whether any interventions shall have been made by our own government to that effect. So just to be more on the practical side of things.
Well, I think currently from PPCB's side, what we do is we've been involved in trying to be certified to audit so that we're paying not in dollars but in rands, you know, that type of thing. But if you're talking about engaging to try and deal with the proliferation of private standards, I mean, you know, from my side, I raised it at the Agricultural Trade Forum as an issue that we need to deal with. And I know that at WTO that it has been raised under the SPS agreement and the technical barriers to trade agreement to try and get countries to become responsible for the companies or the retailers or whomever is putting in these private standards to control the proliferation of private standards. And I know that there's all of these types of things happening. But the issue is that the governments are reluctant to control the companies under their that are registered with them because they're saying that it's a commercial practice. And how can they do that? We've even raised it at the Office of Fair Trade in the UK, and there was a study done on it by the Office of Fair Trade to see if it was fair trade. I'm not sure, maybe.
Thanks, Chair. Practically, Chair, if South Africa was to benchmark its food safety standard, just like as Kenya has done, just like as Chile has done, it becomes reciprocated when it comes to the global gap. Let's explain global gap a bit. Global gap is typically the standard that any exporter from South Africa should have, just as a bare minimum. If we were to say that we recognize, we do that exercise, which I think I was indicating that the hard work has been done, we go engage Global Gap, which is an association, we get the equivalence of the South African gap to Global Gap. And South African growers actually comply with the South African gap. Those exporters that actually take their produce to the open market in Europe would then not require to have a South African gap and a global gap and a difference of 4,000 rands in between. That's the practical work that we could do, Chair. I want to draw parallels to it within the cold chain. A typical example of what we've done is as a PPCB. There's a standard in the cold chain called cold chain quality indicator. What we've done is to interpret the cold chain quality indicator into a regulation in South Africa for cold chain so that the South African exporter doesn't have to comply with the CCQI certification if he or she export compliance with the South African regulation on the cold chain with respect to clearing temperature of the food, is that he or she doesn't need to comply with the situation. That's the practicality, Chair, which I thought you were asking we could do. Benchmark the SA gap to global gap, get an equivalence, and make sure that South African growers comply with the South African gap, which actually could be a public good for that matter.
Dr. Postman is going to be making a comment. I would imagine we're almost drawing to a close.
Yes.
I assume that Chair and CEO, you know, whatever you should have brought here, had paid for her coming here by way of working, so to speak. Dr. Postman?
Chair, no, actually, the reason why I put this private standards on the table is precisely what the CEO has alluded to. I also, coincidentally, for quite a number of years, have been on an advisory body for the OIE to set standards, and as well as animal welfare standards internationally, and I know what the problems are around the world. The problem with private standards is it is actually a brand which is not scientifically based in all cases. It can take anything into account, how many toilets you have per worker and all sorts of other issues that is not related to the scientific standard of the product. What we need to do, and that I'm very happy that we get this information also from the PPECB, and I've seen it internationally when you go, and they obviously know about it. When you take the value chain and you go around from it, from the packing overseas where it's offloaded, again distributed in the market, you can obviously see the difference. The differences of packaging, of quality, of everything from the different countries. And my information is that the South African brands, the stuff that comes from South Africa, is the quality is outstanding. And I think that we can recommend the PPECB on, because it is their doing that makes sure that it is. I can quote you the Outspan. I mean, it's an internationally known brand. What we should try and promote is a local South African brand. And I see that our president has also, availed the new logo. We should really get a standard that is a compliance to the international standards that goes with all the requirements that is for Eurogap or whatever the case may be, and put in South African a logo and a brand on it, so that people overseas knows where the product comes from, and they will have preference. And when you speak to the buyers in those international distribution companies, they know exactly where to get the good stuff. And they know exactly where to go and buy it. And they will not buy from suppliers that are not up to standard. And I think we can really score a few points if we promote our own product. And we must maybe speak with the Department of Trade and Industry on a more broader base, not only agriculture, but I mean in general, to get this as a model. The bottom line is private standards are more expensive. It's not scientifically based, and it's not really necessary to go for private standards. And the problem is with private standards that the consumer do not know that they're paying extra for that specific product. And it is private, as I say, private, because that is exactly what it is. It's private companies setting their own standards, which is not related to the international standard that is accepted within WTO, within the trade negotiations that we have with Doha, and everywhere else. So that is my suggestion, that we take this process forward.
Okay. The gentleman was not introduced, or I did not hear him being introduced. I just see him that he's written a note that says from the department. I take it to Agriculture, Forest and Fisheries. He would have loved to have responded to some of the questions, unfortunately. I kept on insisting that he must speak via the CEO or the chair. I guess he himself felt that he's got more powers for himself, not to just pull him on a few legs, and I won't tell you which one. Mm-hmm. Now that then would, notwithstanding all the, unless he still wanted to respond on the same issues of the private standards, unless you also want to make a comment, if you could also just introduce yourself as well, so that we are able to record you.
Chair and honourable members, my name is Buitoko Ntabele from the Department of Agriculture, the Director of Food Safety and Quality Assurance. I wanted to speak a little bit with regard to private standards. I think all the comments that have been made with regards to private standards are in many respects correct. But I think there's a history to private standards. They came out of government putting responsibility on the part of those that purvey food, that if you put it on the market, if there is a problem with it, you will be responsible for managing the consequences. Because of that, those particular people in all the different countries developed a group of standards. It is not one standard. It's a plethora of standards that differ substantially. And I must say, Honorable Member, that there is also a chance that that can happen in this country. If you look at Pick and Pay, if you look at Woolworth. So it's a problem. I think the chairperson of the PPECB mentioned that it's a subject of discussion at the WTO. I remember I was here with this committee last year, wherein I mentioned that the following week we were discussing the same topic at the WTO. The biggest problem with private standards is that they will probably only be resolved through case law. In other words, that's my personal view. I think I must put a rider on that. In that countries within the framework of the WTO agreement are refusing, in terms of applicable articles, to say that, yes, these people are in my territory. In terms of international law, I am responsible for their activities. But they say, no, this is the free market. This is free business. And that is why I foresee the chance of resolving this only through a country taking one country to the WTO courts and winning, if that ever happens. That is the only chance we have with regards to resolving. Because as we sit in these meetings, people say, no, it's private individuals. Governments don't trade. Governments don't trade. There's a trader in South Africa exporting fruit or wine to the UK. That person in that country lays down the standard to say, it shall have this. And the, one of the things that I must also explain to the honourable members is that there are international benchmarked standards. And all or most of our trading partners are setting higher than international standards. And they are allowed within the WTO space to do that. But they have to have scientific reasoning. On top of the need for scientific reason, there's also what is called a precautionary principle, which means that if I have doubt about a consignment because of some information, I could also set a higher standard simply because I have doubt. So it's not a very simple and straightforward. That's all I'm trying to put to the committee, that it's not a simple and straightforward issue as we are making it to be. And I'm also saying that by its nature, it's being used to differentiate one from competitors in the marketplace. That's what it has done. And I think the most positive thing that has happened locally is that people that are involved in what is generally known as the consumer goods market, there's an association of them, they have come together to try and standardize on one platform of standards, that all those that have signed would then have one standard. In terms of local and control, and the control of imports, Chair, if you can indulge me, one last sentence, is that a country sets standards for its own country. And our standards that we have are pegged at the level of international standard-setting bodies. Exports are set by set countries. Therefore, it is not necessary that your standards must be the same as of those other countries. It will help. But you must realize that in this country also, you have a very wide variation in terms of your local market. That if you set stringent market standards, you're also taking some of your people out of that market because their food will be found to be below standard. And that is a consideration that we must also have. So I'm just saying that it in my honest opinion, it is not a very simplistic issue that we want markets. What we have tried and achieved is to say this is the benchmark. Those that can reach a higher standard, let them do so for them to be able to trade. But also for food security, you need to have a lower benchmark standard that is pegged with international standards. Thank you, Chair.
Our director here for food safety in the department has only risen now. I guess the interest on the subject matter couldn't escape him. So
But there are other areas, I'm sure you've taken note on some of them that, you know, we're making reference to the department on. And that you're going to report directly and we get a feedback on some of them. I guess, members, we seem to have concluded. I saw a hand from Mama Wuza, which is the only last remaining hand, which will then wrap up and allow ARC also to wrap up from where they are seated so that we don't waste more time. And perhaps one to come close to the mic, I guess. There's a chair, or rather there's a mic that side that can equally be made use of, and two or three could come close to that as we wrap up our session. Ms. Mabuza?
Chairperson, I wanted to raise a concern while the last speaker was presenting, to say, as a member of parliament in a portfolio committee, I'll have a very serious problem of a government official stating that this is his personal view. Because my understanding is that he should come to the committee to come and present the departmental view, not his personal view. And secondly, Chairperson, we invited to come and make a presentation. We'll have a day with the department to engage with the department, all entities that have presented to us. And that's why I'm having a problem, to say as if he's defending the department or whatever. And it doesn't look well. They will have their bite as department. Where will we engage them on all issues that were presented to us? That's what I wanted to raise.
Under normal circumstances, Committee Secretary, you have erred on this one. We are supposed to get to know as to who is here, so that we don't get surprises in a situation wherein people have to rock up. That's why I simply ignored you on your notice. I assume that you are part of the team, and whatever issues you wanted to raise, you should have raised them through, you know, the leadership of the team. In future, we shouldn't have a situation like that, Secretary, wherein people are here but not introduced, or rather are known to be here. I think that's one of the issues that we need to look into. Members, I would imagine here we have these two entities in front of ourselves, and then we only have another 25 minutes at the most for us to wrap up. We will certainly have a situation where we can engage with both of them at the same time, just to create some precedence of thought. I take it that also you are going to remain until that time. You are naturally here until around lunch time. The floor is open. Mr. Abraham Mama Mabuza.
Yeah, Chairperson, I'm directing my questions and...
Nyaluma?
Sorry.
We can go ahead.
And the possible way forward to the ARC, because I consider the ARC to be a very vital component in moving our country forward on the road to food security and self-sufficiency, etc., etc. Now, Chairperson, what I want to suggest is that, you know, in a presentation like this, you don't normally get to the nitty-gritty of the real problems that confront the ARC. And if one reads between the lines, and having come along 10 years in this committee, I believe that the ARC is facing a major crisis. And there's only one way this crisis can be addressed. Firstly, Chair, I suggest that ASAP, we need to go and spend at least a day or two with the ARC, look at all their facilities, look at all the work that they are doing so that we can get a bird's eye view of what is happening and the importance of what is happening and what needs to happen. Secondly, Chair, coming back from such a visit, we also need to be advised by the ARC to take us into their confidence and to tell us exactly where all the shortcomings are and what sort of, if it's a budgetary constraint, what sort of requirement will there be. Although I want to say to the credit of Dr. Muepuli, he did mention some figures here. But we need to get to grips with what's happening at the ARC, the problems confronting them, and we then need to be the interventionist party, as PC of Parliament, to see that interventions are made to put this organization, the ARC, onto a footing which will take us into the future. Our chairperson, I just want to remind them that they did not respond to the question of the mining at Nooit Gedacht Research Station, the impact thereof on the research work that is supposed to be done there. There was a response with regard to the ring-fenced funds, the 1995 ring-fenced funds. And what I would like to know there, Chair, is Dr. Muepuli has responded that there is no record of where the funds went to, if I understood him correctly. Now, if that is the case, what was the amount that's involved? At what point did the current leadership of the ARC discover that those funds were no longer there? What steps were taken by them to determine what happened to the funds? And what was the results of those steps? For example, has anybody been found to be culpable? If so, what steps were taken to take such people, bring them to book? And what is the way forward of the ARC?
Which is your last one?
It's an important one, Chair. It's the last one. It's my third one. If you want to stop me, I don't mind, Chair.
Okay, fine.
I mean,
I'm not
allowed to make an important contribution, Chair. Please.
Next one.
Chairperson, I wanted to know what happened to the model that was presented to ARC, the National Research and Development Model, to say why is that model not implemented. Secondly, Chairperson, I want to say the issue of asset register, Chairperson, I'm bringing it for the second time. We requested the asset register last year, and it was never presented to us. And I want this committee to have a due date where we will, if the register is with MDA, to leave the register or present the register to us within 14 days, because we will call you for this asset register. The last one. Chairperson, if you drive from Free State, Gauteng, Mpumalanga, and Limpopo, you see a lot of birds, brandy. You see a lot of lantana camara, and in some farms you see jointed cactus. Those are alien species. What is ARC doing about these species? The only species that you dealt with is the one in KwaZulu-Natal, and for that I compliment you. But with other areas, I don't know what's happening, because Makuba Sloop is full of brandy, a nest, a bed brandy, all over. And around Tabazimbi, a lot of farmers are losing their stock through Lantana Camara, and we're not doing anything about it. Can we get a response?
Now that you mentioned that the asset register was delivered last year, so that should mean effectively it is readily there. If it can be delivered by end of business day today.
Chair, the person that's responsible for it has just left. That's the company secretary, and I've instructed him already that he must send it through. The parliamentary representative of the department. Unfortunately, as he indicated, it was delivered under the previous portfolio committee. We will deliver it again, you know, as soon as he arrives in the office, either today or by tomorrow morning. I've already given that instruction, Chair. Okay, thank you. Chairperson, my apology, we didn't have sufficient time to answer all the questions. We are doing quite some important work around the felt and range forage issues. We're not just doing alien invasives. By the way, a lot of the work that is done by Working for Water in terms of research and development is done by the Agriculture Research Council. That includes some of the work around eliminating some of the alien invasives through biological control, where we have the expertise to work around them. We have scientists that go out all over the world to look for natural enemies of some of these alien invasives, and then they come back and implement those strategies in South Africa. The National Research and Development Model, I would like to get more details with you, Honourable Member. I have no clue what you're talking about because we have not received such a model. But if you could please just give me the details, I will go and check for it and then come back. I've just inquired with the person responsible for research and development in the department, Mr. Sibula, who came in late, and he also doesn't know anything about it. So if you could please give me more details on that. I would like to remind the Honourable Committee that there is an outstanding invitation from the ARC that was issued by the chairperson of the board. If you recall, when we presented the annual report, for the committee to visit ARC facilities and to engage a bit more, that visit is still outstanding. In our diaries, we were informed that the committee was going to be coming to ARC sometime around January this year. And that did not happen. We were told it was going to happen at the beginning, sometime in February. That did not happen. We're still waiting. If you could just give us dates, we'd be more than happy to welcome you. We'd also be more than happy to show you our facilities, what we do, what kind of challenges we have. In large measure, I've reported on a lot of these particular challenges. If I am to respond to the question around ring-fenced funds, we used to get, when we looked at the letters of allocation, letters of allocation used to indicate that you've been given X amount of money, of which Y amount of it is ring-fenced for these particular activities. Then after a certain amount of time, that letter changed. It did not have those ring-fenced funds, which actually means that the funds did not come to ARC. It's not to say that somebody did something with the funds to ARC, at ARC. In my time since I've been at the ARC, we have unearthed all of this. We've reported this several times and many times to the department and to all the ministers responsible for agriculture on this particular matter. We've even reported it to National Treasury. We've reported the shortfall around the animal improvement schemes in various ways. I think the director responsible for R&D will attest to that. He knows those kinds of reporting to the department that is given. We've even given the illustrations to Treasury to say these are the shortfalls in running some of these projects, and as a result of that, we are unable to implement other things. So perhaps I'm responding to your question. I don't think anybody has done anything to money, untoward internally in the ARC. What has happened is that I think there were some budget cuts that must have happened several years before our time that have impacted on these particular ring-fenced activities. I think I've answered all the key ones that have just come in. Have I missed anything, sir? The mining at Notre-Dame, we just heard about it today. It's actually quite a surprise. We will chase after it and find out and then come back. We can even send you a written response.
Can we get that response by end of next week at the most?
Chair,
in other words, by end of Wednesday.
business day.
Chair, I've just received an input here from the honourable member. It's about the National Agriculture Research and Development Strategy. That is implemented by the Department of Agriculture. We simply try to find out how best what we do is in line with that particular work, and that's already incorporated in the in our strategic plan and in our business plan. And I also reported on that when we gave our presentation.
Are you done?
Yes, sir. In terms of the questions that came up.
No more policy?
Thank you, Chairperson. I don't recall that I did hear that the ARC did respond to the climate change issue. ARC is saying they on SMACA plan, but we would like to know as the portfolio committee whether there is a plan for the climate change and a strategy. Do they have a strategy for climate change in this financial year in place?
If I was just to there was a question asked earlier on about coordination of research institutions. And then, of course, your response only covered only on a matter related to provinces and the fact that you do not have any jurisdiction over the provinces. But you do have other research institutions, among others, the CSIR is one of those, to a point where CSIR, as far as I interact with some of the players out in the field, would even be competing with ARC. Now, for me, that is duplicating of resources, that we always cry foul and say there's limited budgeting, there's limited that and limited that. But on the other hand, we have a scenario wherein there is duplication of resources on the same work expected of either yourself or CSIR, to a point where coordination of such for me would entail matters related to sitting down, being able to delineate on what is it that this one is doing and the other one has to do or is doing, so that we don't have a situation where there is competition. Rather, they must be complementing of whatever what we are doing, as we are doing the same thing almost with the same mandate from the same ANC-led government.
Thanks. Chief, maybe if we are to deal with the issue of the climate change, I gave an account of an example of various research projects that are funded by international bodies. One is around drought-tolerant maize that we are doing. The other one is around maize that can grow in soils that are depleted in nitrogen. And the other one is around the fact that we have, as part and parcel of our strategic plan, when we presented our presentation, we said we've now started to do, come up with an approach on a multidisciplinary, approach around some of the projects. And one of those was around climate change, to say how do you bring a whole range of different scientists from different fields and from different institutes, either within the ARC and from other areas, to work around certain projects that are dealing with climate change. That's the examples and that's the response I had given earlier. We can give you a lot more examples around the issues of climate change in terms of what we do. Most of our work is not about developing strategies and policies. It's around actually coming up with actual products, and it's about coming up with the detailed scientific information and providing that information to decision makers, be they farmers, be they provincial authorities, be they even the the national government of South Africa. We provide all of that information and that advice, including prediction around what we think is likely to happen around rainfall for the next season, over the next 3 months and so on. That's what we do. And we provide all of that information and all of that advice. Sometimes we even provide advice around possible outbreaks for example, of locusts in a particular area to the Department of Agriculture so that they can start to implement the appropriate measures to deliver on what's supposed to happen. So that's much of what we do. And a lot of that is around, you know, really trying to say, in terms of the broader government policies, how do you come up with the actual solutions that are going to deal with these particular issues? The other example is, we've got projects at Owner Support Veterinary Institute. This is an ARC institute, where we are studying the emergence of new diseases that may be arising from climate change, and trying to say, okay, what would be the appropriate vaccines that actually are going to be required to work in that environment or in that changing environment. So there's a whole range of projects that we are doing on climate change. If maybe you didn't hear the response, my apology. I hope we've given some clarity around that particular issue. Is there another one that I missed? Thank you. Yes, I am, Chair. The coordination of research, I think you've actually hit the nail on the head. Because to some extent, it's been one of the challenges that we've been facing as ARC. My response was really directed at the question as to whether are you coordinating any research? And my answer was that the ARC is not coordinating any research. But we do have a problem as an institution that there is, to some extent, duplication. And it's not limited to your CSIR, because you see some of that at universities. Now, we have been engaging as heads of science councils with each other under the umbrella of the Department of Science and Technology to try and find common ground around issues that are affecting us collectively. And this is also one of the issues that we've raised amongst ourselves. The question then becomes, to what extent are the various government departments, because also these various science councils fall under different government departments. Medical Research Council is under the Department of Health. CSIR is under the Department of Science and Technology. Now, if you're going to try and effect any particular changes, you actually have to go through the various government departments through which these bodies fall under, to be able to collectively start to drive the process of reducing or eliminating some of the duplication. But we've got to also keep in mind, Chair, that some of this duplication did not just simply show up overnight. I'll give you an example. A lot of the equipment that is now used for research around agro-processing in the ARC, in the CSIR, was originally equipment that was used for the chemical industries, you know, for the chemistry side of it. When that industry started to die out because of emerging new technologies, it also became suitable to use some of that same equipment for biological research, which then obviously means agriculture. So you have some of these particular things that also arise over time. So my response here is that issue is that we would be more than happy to engage in discussions around reducing or eliminating some of this duplication. We may perhaps need the support or the management, so to speak, in terms of coordinating the process of the various government departments that are responsible for these particular public entities. Thank you, Chair.
Any further questions before we close? We only have 5 minutes. If I were just to quickly go on to the one specific area, there is what is called the integrated what is this referred to? Food security and nutrition. you certainly, again, by way of department, whether social development or education and Department of Agriculture, Forest and Fisheries, all having to pursue this different, to a point where I seem to ask a question as to how best and a role that ARC is or could be playing. If you could comment just on that specific one.
Okay, on the Integrated Food Security and Nutrition Program, I think we have a strategy, we have one of our strategic objectives that is around, if we can spell it out. One of our strategic objectives is to enhance nutrition, food security, and food safety, which responds directly to all of the key issues that are contained in that particular integrated food security and nutrition program. Basically, what we've done, we've identified the key things that require us as ARC to contribute towards the success of that particular program. One of them is around the quality of nutrition or the quality of food. So what is it that we exactly do? We conduct research to come up with some of the foods that may be biofortified in order to ensure that people, instead of getting supplements of vitamins that may be chemicals or in the form of tablets, they get them naturally in their foods. And through that, we work with the Medical Research Council, and the project is starting to yield some very good results. We're also working on that same project with the Department of Education to try and provide some type of education at schools so that people can start to know what kind of food they need to eat as a combination in order for them to have a good healthy nutrition or diet in their system. So our role really is largely around the contribution towards the success of this particular program through a variety of research programs or projects that we do. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, I think the issue that you're also raising is not so much of a duplication, but really one around coordination. If you take the medicinal plant program, what we're seeing is that we need coordination between those that have identified a medicinal plant with a particular compound, which the CSIR does to a large extent. And we then therefore need to have the coordination of saying, what does the ARC do to ensure that that medicinal plant can be grown appropriately and the agronomy around that? And on the other side, for the Medical Research Council, to be looking at how do you test that particular compound in a safe way within the clinical setting. And what seems to happen is that coordination between the three is not. So we're working in isolation where we are doing the nursery work, where the CSR is doing the chemical work. So I think the other issue that we need to address is the coordination of these programs. It's the same with the cultivar program. If you look at on page 41 of our business plan, we've got nutrition enhancement through biofortification. We've got development of improved cultivars, lines, and hybrids to improve the nutrition. Similarly, we're looking at enhancement of shelf life of products so that the nutrient value of the food is not lost. And lastly, improved nutrient value of food and feed. So we're working at the end where we're trying to improve it within the plant, while the others are looking at it at another level.
I take it that members, we have arrived at a conclusion of our program. And in so doing, we should thank both the ARC and also the PPECB on the time spent and also preparation done for our committee. We have a budget vote on the 13th of April on agriculture, forestry, and fisheries. obviously we will have to have a report on all what we've been doing before that, and we intend taking such a report on the 23rd of March. We will strive towards taking that committee session outside of the precinct of Parliament. Underline the word, we will strive. There are factors that will contribute towards that, among others, is budget. And then I'm just thinking here on my own, looking at some of the members here, a number of them are actually, as they travel to Cape Town, they literally hail from Johannesburg, if I'm not mistaken, from Limpopo, connecting Johannesburg, coming here. To a point where it might be possible from a budgetary point of view for us to be able to meet in Johannesburg. We'll strive. That will be in 2 weeks' time, so to speak. Next week, members, we're having OVP and Land Bank coming to present to us. We have, as planned in our last program that we adopted, for Tuesday. I did come across Dr. Lopsha from Grain South Africa. Apparently, there was a correspondence inviting the committee to attend the Grain South Africa Congress that is taking place at Bothaville last week. Unfortunately, that was not communicated to us from within the committee secretariat in good time. I did receive the correspondence and handed over to them, and we were not able to do any proper planning. However, we still do have time to meet with a team from Grain South Africa. We did receive correspondence, which will suggest that to a point where we might even have to meet in Johannesburg. So as we are planning for that program, we might also have to incorporate such a plan of having to meet with Grain South Africa during that time. I take it that we had exhausted almost everything that was expected of us, both from ARC and also from PPECB, and also from ourselves as committee. And in so doing, I wish to thank everybody, and the committee session stands adjourned. Thank you.